Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome to the Fell Into Food podcast. I'm your host, Chef Jeff Bell. Today is really exciting for me. This is the first interview in which I have the opportunity to speak to a food product co-founder. The first of my two guests today is Elise Tressley. She is the dynamic CEO and co-founder of Realm. Before venturing into the world of tech, Elise made waves in New York City with a startup that was successfully acquired in 2018. But that's not all. Her journey began with the fast-paced realm of finance, starting as a trader at an investment bank and later making strategic moves in a hedge fund, SAC Capital. Also joining us today is Margaret Kaufman, the director of partnerships at Realm. Margaret's career path took an exciting turn during college when she turned an internship into a full-time role, starting off in sales within hotels and hospitality. Margaret has now set her sights on forging significant partnerships, including the likes of Soho House. Realm is a zero-waste food company that is shaking up the food service industry with the fastest plant-based smoothie in the universe. Not the world, but I said it, the universe. And they're doing it without any produce waste, food prep, or freezer space. Get ready for an engaging conversation filled with insights, experiences, and a dash of fun. I hope you enjoy. Today's podcast is sponsored by Invacus. Invacus provides vacuum packaging solutions for food service and packaging professionals. Their brands include Hinkleman vacuum sealers and Greenvac multi-purpose pans. This equipment can help operators save time, money, and allows kitchen teams to be more efficient in their day-to-day operations. I've been using the Greenvac pans and I absolutely love them and its marinating capabilities. I can reduce those times to minutes instead of hours. If you want to learn more, check out Invacus at Invacus.com. That's Invacus.com. I want to know about your story going from finance to food, because that is a hell of a jump. I don't know how else to put it, especially when you gave me your bio. I looked at it and I go, okay, successful, started a company. So like, how in the heck do you go from that to food?
Yes. It's very nonlinear, my background. I started my career in finance. Was out in New York for about 10 years in total. So investment bank, then went over to a hedge fund. But during that time, I covered the consumer space. So was always very fascinated by those business models, and then was always very passionate about food and nutrition. So, you know, in my free time, reading like gut health books and things like that. And so when I wanted to start a company, I actually thought I was going to start a nutrition company in the tech space and had done research there. But that really never got legs. And two of the guys I worked with at the hedge fund, and I had an idea. And so we ended up leaving to pursue that, was a tech company. Interestingly, in the HR space, which no background in that either. But yeah, worked on that for a few years, still had been incredibly passionate about, you know, food and beverage, and really always wanted to get into this space. And then my roommate at the time had connected me with Lauren, my co-founder. And serendipitously, we started to get into the acquisition process with the tech company I had started. So it was kind of this like perfect timing sort of thing. And Lauren had started working on this product idea and was sort of tinkering around with it. And so, you know, as they say, we went to dinner and the rest was history. So ended up selling the tech business, which was a really wild experience. And then we started working on Realm.
So was she always kind of in the food space, or was she also?
Yeah, she's the one with more domain, with the domain expertise. So she, yeah, she was in the wine industry.
Wine. Very
so yeah, she has a lot of certification.
Still in Florida? Cause I know she's in Florida now, or was she?
She was in New York. Yep. New York. So we worked on the business. We launched officially in 2019, just on the D2C side, and bootstrapped that. And so wanted to gather feedback and iterate on the product and, but yeah, so if you need wine recommendations, she's the go-to.
I'm like an on and an off. Like, I don't drink a whole lot, but like when I want a good bottle of wine, you're always kind of like, what do you go for? There's so many varieties and fillers. Yep. And yeah, we'll have to get her out or talk to her too.
And
do some wine some wine stuff. So, okay, you said 2019. Okay, we got COVID rolling around that time frame. Building a business. Oh my gosh. I can say is I had to learn the supply chain during COVID. I had moved from operations into a home office role, and it was like, cool. I think I took the job in like January, and then COVID hits in March, and I literally move over back from Indy to Chicago, and I was like, I don't even know the supply chain. I know as an operator, but not as like running a company. Like,
remind me, where were you at before?
I was in operations. I was at University of Indianapolis.
That's right. That's right.
So I universities is my background.
Yep.
7.5-ish years in that space at varying universities. And I knew that space well. That's what gravitated me, honestly, to a lot of these products because I have that kind of mindset. I know what the college kid is looking for. But I came back, and so now I'm in supply chain and trying to figure out how do you manage the supply chain when everything just goes down? So that was fun. So
yeah. Good time to do it, though. It can't get worse than what it was.
It can't be any easier.
Yeah.
So you start a company and then COVID comes. What is that like?
Oh my gosh. Well, we were things were going so well. It was one of those things where we're like, gosh, this is going really well. You know, I'm like, my last startup was when we first got, we're trying to get going. There were so many hurdles and it felt like swimming upstream. And we're like, this is working. So through 2019 and bootstrapping the business, we built out this D2C side, updated the product, iterated on branding, and then had started having conversations with food service folks and had always wanted to get into that channel. And had so much interest. So we're like, this is great. We're building this pipeline. We were starting with hotels and restaurants. This was about probably about January 2020. So we're building this pipeline. We're starting to change the format of how the product would be delivered. So instead of single packets and smaller bulk packaging, we were developing bigger packaging for food service. And we went out to raise capital off of this whole thesis hey, smoothies from scratch are really arduous as an individual, but it's even worse at scale for these larger organizations. We solve that pain point. Look at this big market. We're getting all of this traction. So we're in the fundraising process. We're getting all these customers. We're, 2 months in, about to close the round. And it's March. And so it was really interesting. We luckily got a portion of that capital in, people were wiring checks as the world was flipping upside down. So we got in at least enough to continue to survive. But that business, as we all know, went away overnight. So that was crazy.
Yeah, university. I remember that was, again, my transition period. I had to kind of stay at the school. It was like an on-off transition it out, and it was just wild. Like, nobody's on campus, and they're like,
"Yep,
let's serve meals." And it was all these to-go. It was just the most bizarre thing ever. Looking back, just the thought of like how we out, I'm like, that was just so stupid. Why we were all kind of like in a panic mode, and it was like, it probably wasn't that bad.
I mean, yeah, everyone thought the world was ending. Yeah. And it's like, is this 2 weeks? Is this 2 months? When does this stop? Trying to like manage cash flow and that sort of thing was just wild. You already don't have visibility or a lot of visibility as a startup. Yeah, it was just like the Wild West.
Yeah. So, Margaret, were you – I don't want to leave you out of this combo. We got two here today. My first dual combo interview. But were you around for that ride when it all was coming? Or I know because you started interning and then came on full-time.
A little bit, yeah. I began as an intern. I think it was in 2018. I was the first –
before we launched.
Yeah, oh, okay. College intern. So it's I kind of saw the beginning of the D2C side. There were three flavors to start. They had – different names, different colors. It was a wild time. And then once I graduated college, I did work in a different field for a while. But luckily, Elise and Lauren came back around and had me do some part-time work for them. So again, it was still mostly on the direct-to-consumer side of the business. But I was always on the wings just waiting for a full-time position to open up. And then thankfully, one did. But I wasn't full-time during the whole COVID ordeal. So I feel like I heard bits and pieces about it. I wasn't in the thick of it. But it was interesting watching them build this business, especially with B2B where we have so much growth and all of a sudden it, you have all these challenges that you weren't anticipating. But I think there's so many learnings that we gained from that you know, it really gave us an opportunity to step back and look at the business differently while everyone was in the throes of COVID. And then once COVID kind of tapered off, we were ready to go. So yeah, it was a crazy time though.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Why a freeze-dried powder? So the product, right? We haven't even gotten into the product. You started a company.
Yeah.
What are we even talking about, right? So we're talking about freeze-dried smoothie mix powder. I don't know how you exactly explain smoothie mix. It's phenomenal. And I know when you introduced it, I the shelf stable is really kind of what kicked it for me, because most things are be frozen, refrigerated, and that can be a challenge for a lot of people. So how, again, the idea of let's just do freeze-dried powdered fruit. How does that even come about?
Yeah. I mean, I give credit on all the credit on that to Lauren. She is the product guru, but she had started tinkering around with freeze-dried and dehydrated when we sort of reconnected. And what we wanted to create, we both loved smoothies. We wanted to create something that we could have and make and have quickly on the go if needed. And the cool thing about freeze-dried and dehydrated fruits and veggies is they're dried at peak ripeness. So you're getting the best nutrition density that you possibly can. And then it's crushed into a powder. And then, you know, as you've seen, you mix with ice and water, and it's sort of like a smoothie from scratch, but more nutrient dense. You can get in more ingredients. So we wanted something that was macro balanced, would keep us full. Originally created it for ourselves. And so that's how it started. We were running around New York. I was still working on, closing this deal with my last company and selling that. And Lauren was still in the wine industry as a director. But we were running around and we just weren't eating well. And kind of everything we looked at that was sort of in this on-the-go category, either, most of it as synthetic ingredients or, preservatives and added sugar, or if it's healthy, it really just doesn't taste good and it's not something you want to keep having, or it does require prep work. So that was really the kind of the catalyst for the idea. It was that pain point that we were dealing with, and we just weren't eating right, but we wanted to. So that's how it started. And then pretty quickly after we were building the flavor profiles and the different SKUs, we started to realize that this food service opportunity could be really huge.
Yeah, it's always needed, especially athletes, that space. And as a general, that breakfast eating. I've got mine today was with coconut water, and because I'm a coconut water freak. I love coconut water.
Love coconut water.
And it's the first time I've tried it, and this one's the mango. It's phenomenal.
Are you liking it?
Oh,
you're the best.
Because when we did it's good. Mm-hmm. But it's missing that body.
Yep.
And then when we sampled it originally, that almond milk was a phenomenal option for it. Just gave it body. You're not adding too much to it to take away from what the product is. But this coconut water, for me?
That's in the spot.
All
right. Love that.
The mango is, I'm biased, it's my favorite, I have to say. I love it. It's got that kind of sweet from the fruit, spicy from the turmeric. So really good balance.
It's very good balance. And the color profile. Uh-huh. It's visually appealing.
Love
you
a bright
want,
color.
You look at it and you say, I want to drink it. I made some of the, what's the blue one?
Blue pineapple.
Blue pineapple. I did it with pineapple juice today, so it's like a little bit greener, but.
I did some at the office. I was like, you know what? I need something for lunch. I didn't have any lunch. And I was like, you know what? We have all this smoothie powder. I'm gonna use this smoothie powder. I didn't know measurements because I was like, how much do I can't remember how much you said. And I know I have it all, but I was like, I just took a scoop and I threw it in, and I looked at the little packets and I was like, that's about how much ice and liquid. And it was still delicious. I don't know if the ratios were right, but it was absolutely delicious. But you have a secret ingredient that I think in the product, and I think it's not talked about, and I want to know more about this Sacha Inchi. Am I saying that correct?
You said it correctly.
Sacha Inchi protein.
Yes.
That actually gives it that protein factor.
It's such a cool ingredient. We sort of stumbled across it. We used to have pea and brown rice as the protein
and
component.
Everyone does that.
It has a chalky taste to it.
Yes.
And that was always something we were trying to solve for. We're like, we want protein in it. We want it to be plant-based. That was very important to us. But we were always sort of trying to solve for this chalky, earthy flavor. And we came across Sacha Inchi. We source it from Peru. It's one of the only plant-based proteins that's a complete amino acid profile.
So it's got all nine.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly. And when you have it by itself, it has sort of like a creamy, nutty flavor to it, but it's actually a seed.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about nut allergies, but kind of has that type of taste to it. And then when we added it to the blends, or swapped it in rather, for pea and brown rice, it doesn't mute the fruit flavors. Like,
oh no, not even close. You can't tell that there's a protein, because you normally get that chalky, you know, you drink like the Naked, the protein, you get that like thick chalk taste, and you're just kind of like,
it's a mouthfeel. Yeah.
Like a feel, and you're just like, I don't know if I want to keep drinking it. I'm a weirdo, and I do like that one because I drink things that are off the cuff. Anyway, but I'd much rather drink this than I would that and have that mouthfeel. And it's, again, it's packed full of protein, right? And you have plans of releasing it as it's like a standalone, right?
Yes. We just produced our first batch of the Sacha Inchi by itself because, not surprisingly, you know, some of our food service accounts want to be able to add more in. Our direct-to-consumer customers sometimes want to add more, so we wanted to allow for that versatility. So, yeah, we're really excited about
that.
Are you
the first to use it? I haven't heard of it. Until I saw it and you explained it, I had never heard of it.
Which is so common. It's a lot of, we work with so many executive chefs, and it's just not commonly used. And we're kind of, I think some of the best ideas are when you're scratching your head and you're like, why isn't this used more? But we're not the only company out there. There's a cool snack brand. Yeah, we actually share an investor, Brass Roots.
Okay.
So they're in the snack format. But other than that, I very rarely come across it.
I've never heard of it. And we were doing a lot of extensive smoothies.
I feel like you know all the ingredients.
Yeah.
I'm not as chefy as everyone thinks, right? I went to school, did the background, but I never worked in fine dining. I really got into higher education
right away.
It was only a year. And then I went right into higher education, and then the rest is history. I just gravitated. It just seemed to be my niche. It made sense. The students, the vibe, you know, it's
higher
just
ed's fun.
It's
just
really
right
fun.
That you have this youthful, they're looking forward to something. They're trying to accomplish something. And that's just what I gravitated. And I just stayed in it. You know, I was started front of house, went back of house. Juan and I actually briefly just talked about it, and I just loved it. So I just stayed in it. So everyone's like, oh, you're a chef. I'm like, well, technically, yes. Yes, I am.
By training.
And, you know, I always say, like, as chef, you get the title when others kind of acknowledge you for it because of how you
work
the
kitchen. Yeah, we should be calling you chef, technically.
No. Yeah. I always allow the kitchens, whatever. Just don't be disrespectful. I'm not, like, you must say chef. But it was kind of cool the day that it was said, because then you kind of like, oh, I earned the stripes. Like,
yeah,
people actually look at you as such, because I was pretty young. I was 28 when I had my first kitchen.
Wow.
So, and everyone above me, or most, I think everybody in the kitchen was older than me.
That's really. Have you been watching The Bear?
I've seen season one and just had started season two. And that's
season two is good.
It's legit.
It's legit. Yeah. And your name is especially funny for it, because you know how one of the characters thinks he's yelling out Jeff?
Oh, gosh.
So he's saying, Jeffrey.
My favorite.
Really, yeah, she's funny.
Yeah.
So
I
you're
love that.
The chef Jeff.
Love that show. I need to watch season two. I got littles at home, so it makes it difficult to have some downtime.
Yeah.
Especially.
How old are you?
And it's a stressful show.
How old are
5
you?
And 7.
Oh my gosh.
So they're peak.
Also, that probably not good content for them to be.
Not
bad.
For them. No. absolutely
yeah.
not. So we're talking higher education. What other avenues? What other outlets? What's the target market? Because again, I think there's a lot of fits for this. Mm-hmm. And where are you seeing those successes?
Yeah, so we started with hotel, and that was more of, it was interesting because when COVID started to subside a little bit, we picked up on this trend of kind of like revenge travel, and had wanted to eventually get into college university. As you know, those sales cycles longer, there's seasonality there, so that was always kind of on the horizon. But I was actually down in Florida. Had gone down there temporarily for a couple months during COVID when things started to kind of get better. And we literally started just walking into hotels and asking to talk to either the director of food and beverage or the executive chef, and just to tell the story and kind of explain what we were trying to do and get feedback and see if we could get a couple hotels to work with us. And so that was interesting, going to kind of door to door in the hotel world.
Cold call, if you will. Door to door, the old school.
We had started too with kind of the cold calling thing. Like, we'll just call, and no one was picking. I mean, it was just crazy. Yeah. Now we do a little more of that, but it was just such a crazy time. We were also looking for other regions where we could kind of drop in and walk into hotels, you know, right next to each other. And LA was a great market. And so, you know, still kind of in COVID, and we go there and, you know, went to West Hollywood. It's like, you take these 20 hotels, I'll take these 20 hotels, running around literally with a blender. And the blender, the product, I mean, my back at the time, I was like, this is, so we'd do a full day in West Hollywood. Then we went down, did a full day in downtown LA. And yeah, you're just kind of stopping in and trying to talk to anyone that'll listen.
Yeah, it's gotta be difficult to be like, where you now? You brought one of these awesome blenders, the Beast.
The Beast. We love the Beast.
Were you running around with one of those, or are you running around like
at the time,
old school, like Nutribullet in your backpack?
At the time, it was Nutribullet. Okay. Yeah. So we just partnered with Beast. That team's awesome. So now any wholesale account we work with, or any food service account, we provide those Beast blenders, which are beautiful. But yeah, running around with Nutribullet product, even like we'd have water, milk, like kind of everything.
Kinda so like that when you came and like you literally brought the whole arsenal, and like, let me make you a smoothie. You enjoy it,
because we're like, well, if an exec chef will meet with us, we just got to have everything there. Yeah, right. Even though, like, that, you know, so naive. Of course, the kitchen's gonna have ice, like everything we need. But you know, we're running around with it, and so that was how we got our first couple hotels. So the Miami market. Hyatt Centric Brickell, Chef William there took a chance on us. We just were kind of asking for favors, and at the time we weren't even sure how we were going to price it. So we were testing that at the same time, and trying to make sure we had, you know, good margin and things like that. So it was crazy. But that's why we started in hotels, or kind of how we did. And then we sort of, next up, we wanted it to be College University, and then, you know, other opportunities from there, which happy to speak to. But yeah, that was the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, again, college is my bread and butter, but we were always, I know the athletic team, so they were pounded down chocolate milk.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Literally, they would buy pint or the chugs, just cases upon cases upon cases. I'm like, what? Why are they drinking? And I didn't fully understand. And they're like, because it's chock full of protein. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, but really, is that the best sort? I don't know, right? So this has got, again, I don't know per fluid ounce, but it's protein packed.
It is, yeah. It depends on what serving size you're doing. And we ended up actually, because of starting in hotels, we had more protein in it to begin with. And over time, we worked with a bunch of our executive chefs to kind of, you know, take that feedback and update the recipes and things like that. So we lowered the protein to optimize for taste at one point, but wanted, and that's why we're bringing the protein into the market a la carte. So you can add more. So if you want 25 grams in a serving, you know, that's possible.
And it's compact. So again, traditional methods, you got to down a ton of peanut butter or yogurt or whatever it is. And it's just, it can be time consuming. And it's not readily. I can grab a pouch, literally blend it up, and boom, I've got a quick smoothie, and boom, I'm on my way. It's a 2-second process. So when we're talking about the ingredients and products, you said that it's Peru? Is that where that comes from?
Yeah, Sacha and Chia. Yes.
So, like, talk to me about, like, your philosophy, how you are approaching the food waste and being good stewards of food, because there's a story behind that too.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So for traditional smoothies, think about the way, first of all, the smoothie starts. You're cutting off a strawberry top, throwing it in the garbage, and blending your strawberry. So I always tell people, start to finish, we don't have any food waste. Right from the beginning, we're freeze drying that whole strawberry and putting it in the blender and then blending it up. And then hopefully at the end, there's no food waste because it's shelf stable, right? So you're able to use the full product. It can sit for a year, which is incredible. So the food waste has been really amazing to see, you know, there's no food waste. And I think Elise has kind of a crazy stat in regards to American food waste.
100 billion pounds a year.
It's a shame.
It's really bad.
50% of produce goes to waste.
Yeah, I was speaking with a gentleman at Get Fresh, one of the local produce distributors, and they have a pre-cut facility. And he had mentioned their new facility, that if you bring in 100,000 pounds of produce fruit and it gets cut, he's like 30% of that is garbage, 30,000 pounds. And so the new facility, they're squeezing all this water weight out and then turning it, going to the farms. And so you see folks kind of getting on, and it was one to reduce costs for them, but also it is sustainable and it has a selling point to it because now they can sell farmers this organic material that they otherwise couldn't. You're also lowering the carbon footprint.
Right.
Right?
Not because shipping water weight.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. So now you've got this dry product. You're not worried about all this heavy weight. Ship, again, it's got to be relatively cheap to ship overall compared to, again, a frozen case.
That's
a benefit getting into it, like in terms of COGS. I didn't realize. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, oh, this is a really nice benefit for us, but for the environment too.
Well, yeah. Otherwise, you're shipping it in a styrofoam container.
Yeah.
On dry ice or on ice packs. Taping the living crap out of it so it doesn't go. And then it's got to get pretty relatively quick, usually within 2-day air freight.
Yep.
And that's not cheap.
No.
People send me samples all the time and I'm just like, oh my gosh. Like,
yeah. How are you then? Yep.
Yeah. How are you doing business with all of that?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's great. One thing too, speaking of kind of taking it back to college university, it's been really cool to see Gen Z care about this. I think we've been hearing about sustainability for a long time, but I'd say two pockets where I've noticed it's actually really changing. We were at Expo West, it would have been last March, and that was the biggest theme I think that came out of it for me. The biggest takeaway is that there's really starting to be an inflection point in actual action taking place on the sustainability zero food waste side of it. And then as we've gotten into college university, it's been so fun to see students really care about that. Mm-hmm. It's sad to say, I don't think when I was a student, I was
paying attention.
Paying attention to that. I cared about the environment, but there's a different, yeah.
It is. I kind of got it deep rooted. Have you visited Loyola University? Have you hit them up?
I'm sure we've probably hit them up. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Between cold emailing or cold calling.
Because
for sure, but
at the time, I can't speak to now, when I was there, they were the number one sustainable college campus in the nation.
Oh, wow.
Or in the Midwest, and number three in the nation.
Okay.
And it was some of the practices that we did. We had two fabricated dumpsters, but they were massive. One was for food scraps only, and we were on board. Like,
diligent,
we scraped cans
it.
And everything.
I love
and
that.
The other one was full recycling, not just cardboard, but full recycling. So all tins, metals. So we would scrape all cans out and it went into that special dumpster.
Oh, that's
there
great.
Was a regular trash dumpster for regular trash. And then there was a food composting compactor.
I was going to ask, were they composting that
yes.
on the back end?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So then that would then go out to, and I don't remember the food or the waste disposal management company they used, but again, they specifically fabricated because it's such an initiative across the campus. They're, mm-hmm. they're water bottleless, so they don't do any water bottles on campus.
I love this.
They had a cafe. It was called Ingrained, and it was fully made. Like, the chairs were made from, like, recycled milk crates, and the tables were old wood stumps, and everything was sourced locally within
That's cool.
200, 250. Chicago's a little tough, right, to get local, but they stuck to it. But just across campus, all of our fryer oil that was used in leftover, actually, they had a refinery center. And they turned into soap. That was the soap on campus.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh.
So you want to talk about like some sustainable initiatives. Wow. So you just kind of get rooted when that's kind of the norm, especially when that was my first kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You just, when it's embedded into you, it's just like, no, that's just what you're supposed to do.
Right, mm-hmm. Which is how it should be.
Mm-hmm. It's so much easier than you start carrying it over and you see we were a very successful operation, even with doing all these things that normally people associate with, oh, it's going to cost so much money to have all this extra recycling and this extra waste removal. So I love that piece of the story because I am, anytime we talk to people, they say sustainability. I'm like, ooh.
We share that.
What rabbit hole do you want to go down? Because I can go all day talking about sustainability.
Well, unfortunately, I think so many people see it as a challenge, right? You're spending time scraping something out of a can to compost it or whatever. And I think that's a hurdle mm-hmm. for a lot of people. It just seems like more time and effort than they're willing to give. And that's kind of the beauty of the product, I think. It's no extra effort on the person because we're accountable for those sustainability practices.
Yeah, not only that, you're also doing some social responsibility stuff, right? With who you're partnering with?
Yes. We were very diligent when we set up the supply chain. So Lauren and I spent about 18 months before launching the product, and we were still, working part-time and things like that. So we just wanted to take our time with that and make sure that all of the ingredient suppliers that we're working with have, you know, are socially responsible themselves. The U.S. vetted suppliers, you know, having all of the COAs and all the things that you need. So there's a lot, you know, it's sad in a way because there's a lot of shenanigans that happen on that end. Or like we would get specs from ingredient suppliers saying that it's, you know, a clean label and clean ingredient. And then you'd find out it's, you know, it's mixed with maltodextrin and things like that. And so, you know, we really dug into that. Luckily, Lauren's husband's a lawyer, so he was able to kind of help with that.
It's always good to have one of those in your back pocket.
Yes, exactly. And so, so yeah, we spent a lot of time on that and wanted to get that right first. And then our goal over the next couple of years as a brand is to start to tell those stories. So, you know, our cacao, who's making, you know, how is that, you know,
it's
being
so
sourced?
Important. Mm-hmm. Gen Z, they care about where this stuff comes from and being able to tell that organic story, where everything is actually coming from. What am I putting in my body? I want to know. They want to know. That's just what's up and coming right now.
And it's so good because if, you know, brands start doing that, then a lot of the shenanigans will start to go away.
Yeah, the big corporations hopefully. Can't get, I don't want to say get away, but like they do it. And again, everyone's got their business model and probably everyone starts small, but, you know, cost savings, everything happens. And then it ends up into this conglomerate that's just too big to, oh, it's hard to reverse. And then, like you had mentioned earlier, they'll say, oh, we're going to be sustainable. And then you start to see the initiatives. And you're like, where is it? Where's the actual practicality? Yeah. It's one thing to say, we're going to be sustainable. We're going to be socially responsible. But then, you know, you see 5 years, you're like, what have you done? And they're like, oh, well, we changed sourcing of this one product. And you're like, unless you're like a McDonald's or something where, you know, a French fry could be a massive thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, that's great. But let's actually practice day to day what we're
It needs
we're
to
saying.
Be, yeah, inherent and holistic.
For sure.
Yep.
So do you think I think I've asked almost every guest, plant here to stay? Is plant-based, it's around?
Yes. I think, you know, I'm always skeptical of trends. But, and of course there's a place, I'm not vegan. You know, I think what I like about our product is, you know, we don't target vegans necessarily. But I do think that, you know, the nutritional benefits of having, you know, a plant-based diet or, you know, plant forward or however you want to put it, there's science behind it. And so I think, of course, there's buzzwords out there. And I think certain aspects of, you know, the plant-based world will fall off. And we've seen what's happened to the plant-based meat category.
Yeah.
And that's been kind of an interesting wild ride to watch. You know, a lot of those options aren't actually healthier. So
no,
that's the thing is it can't just be plant-based, but then synthetic and not healthy. So I think there are aspects of it that are not here to stay necessarily. But I think as a whole, I don't think it's going anywhere. And we're certainly seeing that with all of our food service customers wanting to, you know, make more room on the menu for plant-based options or swap in some of their current options for plant-based. And I'd have to say, you know, back in you know, 2019, 2020, we weren't really seeing it as much. I think there was a lot of talk.
It was, yeah. You had the big companies, they came out, they tried, and then COVID hit, which in a way in the plant sector was, I think, good because NRA last year was completely different than the NRA, you know, prior years. Mm-hmm. You looked at the labels and you're like, whoa, it went from, you know, this lengthy spreadsheet of ingredients. And you're like, oh, it's down to 12. I'm like, that's pretty impressive from what it was.
There shouldn't be 25. Like, what are we?
There,
and you
there
should
shouldn't.
Be able to pronounce everything.
But that's how it was. So it was kind of this roller coaster where it was kind of like, whoa, plant-based. And then, it, you know, COVID hit and it kind of took a dive. And then now I think it's back on the rise as people are coming up with new innovative ways, cleaner ways to actually give. Like I said, sauteed. People don't understand a complete protein. There's only a few of those out there, the quinoas of the world.
Yep.
I'm trying to think what else is a complete. There's not many out there that one item can give you every amino acid that your body needs,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're on a vegan diet or plant-based for whatever
reason.
So
important.
It's so important because you're not. There are some aspects that you're going to be missing. That's going to give you some of that back into your diet, which is just amazing.
What's your thought on that?
I think it is. I've been pushing it hard. Again, I think it's a lot less about the meat alternatives because a true vegan, vegetarian, if it's for animal reasons, they're not eating it one because they don't, but they don't like the taste. They don't like the look. They don't want the mouth. They don't want that.
Right.
So
right.
It's like, great, cool. Here's a non-chicken tender, but a true vegan is like, I don't want to eat something that tastes like chicken. Right. It doesn't taste
that's
good
not,
to me.
Yeah, exactly.
However, some of these, I think people are going to start to get innovative in the way that they kind of morph how they brand it, and it's the same product rather than being, oh, it's ground beef crumble. It's, oh, here's this crumble or here's something. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to twist it, but they'll make it into a way where someone just goes, oh, that's something that I would want to add into. And they take away some of those flavorings, if you will, that's yep. making it taste like a chicken or a beef or
well, it's
whatever.
Like any natural flavor, you know, things like that. Right. It's like it's when you're – if you're, it's not a clean label, then you're kind of defeating the purpose of it. But I do think – I mean, it's interesting. It's something like – we may have to fact check this, but you know, 80% of America has gut health issues, and a lot of it's from inflammation. Where does inflammation come from? For a lot of people, it can be dairy or things like that. So I don't know. We always avoid the word diet because
anything's a diet. Everyday exactly. How I eat is the American diet, exactly. Right? And then you put a label on it just because it's keto, it's this, it's that. Everything's a diet. At the
right,
end of the day.
Right. But it's just I think people have to be. You know, unfortunately, we have to be our own advocates for our health, you know, in the healthcare world and in the nutrition world and kind of understanding what your body wants and needs. So but plant-based, I think, you know, the good thing is there's it's anti-inflammatory, really, and if it's done right.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what NRA has to bring this year.
Yes.
And I work with some brokers that are in that space, and they come up with some stuff. Again, like Harmless Harvest. Like, again, I love coconut water, but it's always got added sugar. It's not as clean as they say. You're like, oh, it's, and then you look at it and you're like, well, they added sugar, they added something to make it taste the way it is. And for me, it's been the first one that has tasted well because they filter some micro filtering, right? And then it actually turns pink and people are kind of like, wait,
it's cool,
but it's natural.
Yeah,
it's not processed. So yep. I really like certain things like that I can add in. And my little guy, he can't do lactose.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So there's this company that's up and coming. I've been talking to them, Armored Fresh. And they're in, I think, Fresh Time and some of the other whole market in the Chicago. I don't know what markets they're in, to be honest. And he reached out, and I was like, absolutely. So they sent me some of their – they're working on an oat milk because they had – theirs was originally almond. And I was like, yeah, but the issue with a lot of schools is they don't want the nut
yep.
allergy.
Yeah.
Right? So that's great that it may taste good and everything else, but I was like, it's not probably going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So he sent me their oat milk. So that's fermented oat milk is how they kind of
oh, I
theirs.
Love that.
Fermented. That's, I feel like I've never heard of
that. That's really interesting. Yeah.
The melt, the taste. So I did good. I did a full, because I was like, all right, I'm going to test this out before the little guy gets it. Did a full grilled cheese, ate it with soup. I was like, this is, and it was their cheddar. I was just like, wow. I was blown away.
It can
I really
be a
was.
Game changer, like with a child. I mean, that's yeah. limits, you know. The child, but you know, by a lot of things.
Yeah.
So
I love that people reach out and they're like, hey, we have this, we have that, and I love to give them my honest feedback. Because there's a lot of them that'll say, oh, try this, not try. I'm like, it's not good.
It's not.
And yeah, they can't take good. The honest feedback. So what have been your ladies' feedback from the general consensus? Right. Obviously, you've seen what I've had to say.
Yeah.
But others, you know, the hotels you're working with, the colleges that you do get into to try it.
Mm-hmm.
What has been that feedback, and what are you doing with that?
I think nuts is the first thing that comes to mind. There used to be nuts across all the blends. And from a nutrition perspective, it was great, right? Our bold cacao had peanuts in it, and it was tasty and nutrition. It added that fat component of the macro balance that we needed. But then, you know, going into the back of a kitchen and pitching a hotel and you tell them there's nuts, first of all, you're worried about anyone in that kitchen who may have a nut allergy. And then secondly, they're more inclined to say no, I think, because it's an allergen concern for their guests. Mm-hmm. So being able to be kind of the plant-based healthy option on a menu and be the allergen-free option is a game changer. So we removed nuts from all the blends, and I think it's made pitching the product a lot simpler because you're less worried about some of that cross-contamination happening or
that
whatever
that
is.
They look at it and they're like, it contains tree nuts or peanuts, and they instantly shut down.
Yeah.
They instantly are like, love it, can't use it.
Mm-hmm. It's a challenge.
Oh, absolutely.
And you just waste it, not waste it, but you're hoping to get something out of it, and then it just dies.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Everything happens for a reason. The texture got better.
Yep.
We took
really?
The nuts out. And I'm making it, I mean, we're making it sound like, oh, we just took the nuts out. This was a whole product dev process because we had nuts in every one of the blends.
And that's just the two flavor. Of you with the product development, right?
Mm-hmm. And we have about 30 dietitians that we work with a PhD in nutrition that we brought on, you know, shortly after we started the business, just to make sure, you know, Lorna and I, knowing, you know, we don't have a food science background and a nutrition background, we're just passionate about it. So we always make sure to fill the skill gaps if we don't have them.
That's
so
awesome.
We made sure our I's were dotted and our T's were crossed on that front. But I actually remember when we decided to make this happen. It was 2 years ago probably. And we had started hearing this. We were maybe just starting to kind of talk to colleges, and we were like, this is going to be an issue. Hotel, it's maybe, you know, 10% of the time would be a problem. Started to do more research on allergens, and we're like, oh gosh, we got to get these out of here. But the big kind of turning point was one of our incredible partners is Soho House. And at the time I was out in LA, and we were demoing the executive chef, and hadn't talked about nuts ahead of time. We demo it, they loved it. And he's looking at the ingredients, and he's like, oh, you know, we have a no nut policy. And I'm like, okay, this is the final. Like, if I start to hear things more than three times, I'm like, we gotta. So that was, I remember I called Lauren up and I was like, how do you feel about, I know we've been talking about it, but like, let's put an action plan in place and get the nuts out for the next production run. And make sure, you know, it doesn't impact texture negatively. It still has the macro profile. So there's a lot of.
Yeah, that's, food science is a piece I almost, at one point in my career, I was like, should I go back and go get dietetics or do food science? And then I realized I really did not enjoy school. culinary school is one thing, but the other thing, because I originally wanted to be a geologist or paleontologist.
I love that.
Right?
Oh, wow.
So you want to talk about a 180.
Oh, yeah.
Going from digging up dino bones to food. I think all of us in the food industry have a weird background story.
Yeah, totally.
And that was just like methodical, get through English and history. And then, you know, culinary school is just, all I had to do was the cooking part, which was great. You know, it was go in, learn about food, cook, and that was great. And even towards the end, though, I was kind of like, oh my gosh, the tests and the stuff. I was like, I just want to cook.
Yeah.
Like I thought the whole Food Network thing. I was like, I'm gonna be a chef on TV. And then and then you realize what actually goes into being, you know, in the food industry. I was like, that's probably not gonna happen. So you took the nuts out. What other? Is there anything else? Future plans, development, like anything you can kind of pre leak or let. Let the audience know.
Of course, yeah.
Okay. Oh, I love it.
Right. We're an open book. So obviously the protein that by itself hasn't been launched yet. So that'll be new. Didn't take much product development on our end. We just have some really incredible suppliers on that front. So that's up next. We're always in R&D on new flavors. So tinkering around. So if you have ideas, let us know. We have 8 now, so we pretty much have a full roster. But what we're really excited about as sort of an extension from smoothies is going further into the snack category.
I was going to go. I was almost about to ask, what about food applications, coatings within actual food? I could see a place and a time for certain dishes, coconut curries, you know, like adding some like that fruit flavor. So keep going.
Yeah, we love the dried ingredient space, and we know it so well now at this point. Certainly didn't at the get-go. So want to leverage that knowledge and sort of double down on dried ingredients. And we always want to be protein forward. So whatever we develop in the future will have a protein component, most likely. I shouldn't really like
I know we're not married to anything.
100% sure, because we let the consumer. I mean, we're very data driven in terms of qualitative, quantitative, you know, data, and what the consumer is telling us. But we did just do a ton of research on that specifically, and people want protein. But something we're really excited about, and this is not me trying to keep anything close to the vest. We haven't developed it yet and really are just kind of starting, so we'll have to get your feedback. But all of our ingredient suppliers, you know, supply the solid format of the fruit and veggie, meaning, you know, think dried mango or, you know, dried apple. And so we have some really interesting ideas with incorporating the protein in that. And this is a ways off. We're so busy with food service, which is great. We don't have a lot of time for product development on a new line, but we're kind of always talking about it, gathering feedback and seeing what's out there in terms of, like, I mean, we stumbled across Sacha Inchi because one of our suppliers was like, you might want to look at this. There's so many cool ingredients out there. So that's kind of in the snack category with that in mind at a high level is where we're going. But
you know what would be delicious?
Please tell me. We feedback.
Hip peas.
Ooh.
With that powder on it. Yeah. Have you had hip peas?
I have, and I love them.
They're delicious.
The crunch.
They're so crunchy. Good. Again, we switched out from Cheetos to those, and no one even notices. And I'm like, why not? It's made of chickpeas. Some of those powders on there, I would be interested to see what that would. So if you're hip peas, if you're listening,
get with Realm. A collab? Yes.
Coat some of that with some of that this Realm powder.
Give me
powder.
A call.
You could do some cool. I don't know. To me, that's like because it's a powdered coating, right?
Yeah.
You don't need a lot of it. It gives it a product of a flavor. That's just where my mind starts going with. Again, I love playing and getting in the kitchen and seeing applications and how something traditionally is like, oh, it's a smoothie. It's like, what else can it do?
What can we do? Yeah.
Because ingredients are so underutilized. And it's like, I bet you could do, especially with the protein component, when you're trying to get things to be more nutritious. It's just, that's what really compelled me to look deeper into it when I first looked at it. Because again, we get pitched a lot of stuff. Hey, look at this. Look at that. Mm-hmm. The next. And then you look at it and you're like, okay, great. Another product. Awesome. I've seen everything under the sun. And then something kind of just catches your eye and you look at, and again, that ingredient, I was just like, there's something about it. And then when we actually met and talked about it, I was just
which
like,
was the most fun meeting ever. We just played in the kitchen for like
an hour
like and a
half. Who
doesn't
like to have fun in the kitchen versus just like, sitting in a room and here's a smoothie. Enjoy.
It was so fun. What did we mix? What was the energy drink we mixed?
That was Uptime.
Yeah.
We're going to come up with some really good stuff.
Yeah, so Uptime,
that
because,
was cool.
Because it's powder, you can mix it with anything because it's not driven by, oh, it really needs to be mixed with X, Y, or Z for it to achieve its ultimate profile.
Yeah.
If you don't like almond milk, try it with coconut milk. You don't like coconut milk, try pistachio milk. There's totally. So many milk alternatives. I haven't even yet tried it with like regular milk, but I'm figuring the body of it's going to be there. Again, this coconut water is just, for me, it hits a spot.
I love it.
Hits a spot. It's the flavor of the Realm product, but I'm also getting that hydration of the coconut water, the cleanliness of that. So it's just, there's so many ways and applications. And again, my mind just buzzes all over the place. Okay, how do we implement and how do we use this? And getting other people to be as excited as I get about products like
See,
this.
We're so excited, yes.
Because it doesn't happen a whole lot.
The food service space is so creative. I mean, even with just our product, we see smoothies, smoothie bowls, sorbets. Like, it's really interesting to
sorbets,
see
ice
people
cream.
In the
oh
kitchen.
Gosh.
Yeah,
well,
it's
you could
fun.
Easily mix this in into a sorbet mix.
Yeah.
Easily.
We have some of our exec chefs do bowls. Chef Brandon out Four Seasons Fort Lauderdale makes it into a bowl. So, yeah, you can make kind of like a healthy ice cream with the bold cacao.
And
so
that's just with one product, right? I think what you're saying
to
is
your
like
point.
Depending
your
on
products.
The flavor profile that you want to achieve of a dish, you could get pretty creative. And I don't think it'd take a lot.
Right.
No.
Especially on the food side.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can use that powder and it's just going to give it that, what is it that's on this dish? Like, this is going to sound crazy to a lot of people, but like me, I'm like, what if I coated a steak in this?
Yeah.
And
like a glaze. I love out of the box stuff
like that. Or I infused
it
into like an I sous vide.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And then so it like infuses into the meat. Like what would it, I don't know. But it's something that like just piques my interest.
This is why working as a product company, working in food service versus retail is so fun. I think most of my friends that are founders in food and beverage, you know, started in retail or D2C. And of course we have our D2C component, but food service is just great. Like everyone you meet just gets so passionate and loves to experiment. So it's such a fun space.
It is a good segment. So what's a little piece of advice or challenges, opportunities you think other entrepreneurs in the food industry should be aware of?
That's a good question. This might sound obvious, so we'll see. But coming from the tech world and building a business first in the tech space, you don't really need a lot of capital for that to get it going. And if you want to A/B test or change the user experience, you know, my two co-founders, when I was in that world, were both engineers. So one was our CTO, and then the other was product, and then I was doing the business side of it. So anytime a customer was like, hey, can you do this instead of that? Or we'd start to hear a lot of feedback about a feature or function, you know, they could change it sometimes overnight. Or if we wanted to A-B test a button or things like that, you know, it's a quick turnaround. And yeah, and you don't need a ton of capital. Food and beverage, and I went into this world knowing, okay, you have to have capital up front, you're producing a physical product. What I think I didn't appreciate was you'll get, and it almost can be frustrating, you'll get all of this feedback. Like, for instance, when we were using the pea and brown rice protein, the biggest piece of feedback was it's earthy, it's chalky. And you kind of have to sit on that, you know, because you got to wait till the next production run. You got to sell through the product you have. Or interestingly, when we first launched the brand, we were calling it a meal replacement. It was higher protein and higher calorie. And because Lorna and I had wanted it, you know, almost as breakfast, as an easy breakfast. And we found pretty quickly that the word meal replacement had such a negative connotation. And people would automatically think synthetic. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we just developed all this packaging, bold meal replacement. I'm like, this is not good. So, but you can't, you know, you can't go and change it. And then of course it takes capital to do a production run. So right. It's just, Yeah. It's being able to, we try to find, you know, ways to kind of test for these things ahead of the change. But it's not as quick and easy, and it's more capital intensive. So I think that's something to keep in mind. Also, just everything takes a little bit longer than you think it's going to.
Of course. Anything always takes more time.
Yeah, exactly.
You think it's going to take 3 months? I would at least double it.
Double.
Maybe a little bit more, depending on your horizon.
100%.
All right, let's get in the weeds.
Okay.
This is my favorite part. I'm so excited. Okay, so some of these, I gave you a little heads up on a couple, but some of them? Not so much.
Oh, gosh.
All right.
You can go first.
So what's your go-to way of having eggs? Sunny side up, over easy, poached? Do you even eat eggs?
I love that question. I love eggs. I used to be vegan, and the first thing that made me break my veganism, I was craving a hard-boiled egg. Now I like them fried.
Fried.
Oh, wow. You really went vegan other direction. Fried.
Yes, you
now
did.
I'm frying my eggs. Love it.
Yeah. And
I love
you, it. Have it's you range. Done, have you... People don't know. I'm kind of an egg stickler, and I only do pasture raised eggs.
Oh, yeah. You can see the difference in the bowl.
Yeah.
You get an orange egg, and then you go back to conventional 99 cent a carton.
Yeah.
You can't.
Bright. I'm trying to find a yellow, like yellow back there.
Yeah.
Color. I did. What was I doing? I had switched about like 4 months ago, and I was doing something in somebody's kitchen, and I literally cracked an egg, and I about freaked out because I was like, why is this egg so yellow? And then I was like, oh, because you don't buy conventional eggs. You buy the pasture raised.
Yeah.
So I love it because eggs, for me, that's kind of my morning go-to, eggs and avocado.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now I'm going to have to obviously throw in some Ralman Tavares on the way coming
in. We'll hook you up with the smoothies.
For sure. What do you got on that one?
Scrambled's usually my go-to, but I'm the same way. I love eggs. Egg avocado and a little tomato. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, savory breakfast sometimes.
I
and
like
then
a savory
you get your
breakfast
sweet
sometimes.
Here.
Yeah. Usually what I'll do is I'll make that quickly, and then I'll make a smoothie, and then I'll sip on that while I'm, you know.
It's such I'm almost finished because
I know I'm not. Yeah. I need to drink.
It's literally delicious. Just I'm like I could just keep picking it up, and especially if it's in front of me, I don't want to. There's other drinks I'll just sit and I'm like. Yeah, I'm not drinking that.
Do you want to come with us to our meetings when we pitch?
Yeah, I was going to say, all come the time on, you taste it, like, I'm sure you're in a lot of meetings, too, where we'll do tastings, and I'm like, I'll pour myself some, actually. Yeah.
It's just easier to sip on and chat than it is to just be like, here, try,
right.
Which can be, I don't know, because then you can talk about everything while you're doing it.
Yeah.
Love it. What's your spirit vegetable and why?
I've thought about this for a long time. I don't have a great answer.
I don't know if it's a great answer, but it might be controversial, actually.
Ooh.
Okay.
Maybe, kind of. So, tomato.
It is definitely
controversial.
You know
why? Yeah.
Because
you do.
It's technically a fruit, and depending on how you look at it.
And it was we'll have to fact check this, but it was, I think it's the only, one of the only foods that had to be like categorized through the Supreme Court or something.
Really?
No way.
We will definitely have
fun
to
fun fact of the fact day.
Check that.
Yes.
But yeah, so is it a veggie? Is it a fruit? But I love that it's kind of, you got that sort of sweet tanginess in terms of taste profile, depending on what kind of tomato. And then I like it like just chopped up with a little salt or In ketchup form, I
have you seen the meme that's got the three and it's like it has like a bottle of ketchup and is like if tomatoes are considered fruits, is ketchup a smoothie?
Oh, you
haven't seen that?
Product idea?
No, like it's just like think about it, right?
Yeah.
It's like the point. It's like, yep. Is ketchup a smoothie?
No, this
and
is
it's like. Well, I never thought of it like that. Technically,
that is so funny. Yeah, oh my gosh!
Three pictures. I don't remember what the three pictures are, but it's like if a tomato is this, is ketchup a smoothie?
Ketchup's been my favorite. It's funny now that I have a smoothie company, because and technically it is. You know, it's the smoothie.
You love
of
it,
the,
right?
I love it.
Yeah.
I have ketchup everything. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
That's how my dad grew up. Ketchup on everything. Midwest. And my daughter has adopted that because she'll dip her dessert in ketchup. I'm just like.
We would be best friends. I used to have, oh my gosh, this is gross. But probably people will think it's gross. But when I used to go to my grandma's house, she would let me have ketchup just on a bun. Like I would just. Bunch of ketchup.
Hey,
on
a I don't judge.
Can you tell?
I grew up in the middle of nowhere too, so I get it. You eat some weird things sometimes, and this just is what it is. And I get my kids do the same thing, and I let it be. I'm like, you know what? They don't know what's supposed to taste like.
Yeah,
about it. Go ham, eat whatever you want. If that's how you like it. I don't really care. All right, next one. Let's do. What's the most? This kind of leads into this one. What's the most unusual food combination that you swear by?
So
for me, it's like Frosty
by.
And Fry. Like Frosty and Fries is
that's
like my
love
my
a
combo.
Frosty Fry, actually.
Mine is actually peanut butter and syrup. I don't know if that's like a crazy thing or if it's very normal, but on pancakes or waffles, peanut butter and syrup.
So do you just smear the peanut butter and then just put the syrup?
Oh, yeah. My like claim to fame in my family when I was growing up was, you know, those Eggo waffles that are like four
minis.
You would toast two sets. And then you would do peanut butter and syrup and make like a sandwich. And then you'd have four little sandwiches. Very tasty.
I'm going to have to try that one home. We got Eggos in the – we've got them in the freezer at all times.
I think it's just the salty sweet, same as the Frosty Fry. Yeah.
Or like chocolate bacon. You ever had chocolate bacon?
Oh, no, but I could see that.
Oh,
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that.
The first time you try it, you're just like, this,
why is this
shouldn't
so good?
Taste good, but it is.
Yeah. It's like a guilty pleasure.
That's the best combo. Sure. Well, to double down on my – this so I don't still do this, but – so as a kid mentioned the ketchup bun combo. Well, in addition to that, right after it, I would have Tang, but just dry.
Oh, just dry?
Just the dry.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, she may not know what the Tang.
Young.
Yeah, the Tang.
Oh my gosh, you're
who didn't have
feel,
a jar of Tang
was,
at all times?
This was a thing in the 90s. So you probably weren't born yet, but. But yeah, it was like a, funnily enough, it was a powdered product.
Yeah.
Was so. It like a powdered
it's like fake
lemon
orange
juice?
No, it was like a
basically
fake
sugar.
Orange sugar.
Yeah.
And so it would be like, oh, we're having our orange juice, we're having our Tang. And it's like, it's more sugar.
Oh,
than
so you would just add it to water and drink it. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't
no, but
Elise
would just eat
funny.
It.
But I would just eat
she
the
would
powder.
Just eat it.
Wow.
My grandma would let me do that.
Interesting.
That was the two I would have for a snack. I would have. I don't know why I'm telling this, but I would have, and I don't do this anymore, and I don't think it's a healthy thing to do. Let me just say that.
You're not condoning it.
I'm not condoning it, but I had a bun with my ketchup and then some scoops of Tang.
Again, you turned out just fine.
Hopefully. Maybe that's why I'm weird. I don't know.
Outside of Realm smoothie, can you suggest a quick and nutritious recipe for those busy days for people in the food industry? Obviously, this is the go-to, but if you had like if you needed something else, what else can be quick?
Well, I'm a meal prep, not a meal prepper, but I do prep salad every Sunday. So I'll throw in, you know, I'll just make sure there's some sort of protein in there. Tomato, of course, as we've learned, but I'll do that every Sunday. That's kind of my only thing. I'm not that like organized otherwise in terms of like meal prepping, but I'll make a big batch of that and then I just have it in the fridge.
Do you do the same every day or do you change it up with dressing?
Good question. I do have different dressings. I love condiments. That's like my jam.
Well, it's like it's like pick your flavor of the day, right? Because it's the same thing, but balsamic versus an Italian versus Caesar.
Love
a
Caesar.
It changes out the flavor. Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of my move.
What about you?
I think eggs are easy. I think eggs. Just like an omelet with spinach and feta. I feel good that there's something green in it, you know, but the flavor is still there with the feta. So
I love feta cheese.
What's yours? We want ideas.
A quick and I don't know. I'm a big anything I can just hold in my hand. Because as a chef, like, you're normally just like on the go, constantly running around in the kitchen when I was in operations. So for me, it was always like, I always tried to find something that was kind of protein packed. So it was like granola bars.
Yeah.
That was my quick go to. So it was peanut butter, chocolate, you know, it's just loaded. It's got 20 grams of protein because you're just on the go and it's, I don't have time. Even though everyone has time, you just don't think you have time. So you're just shoving it down and then you just keep going. So I'd say that would be the nutritious. Otherwise, you know, when I was out in operations, it was pizza. I'd just grab off the line. And
pizza's so good.
Eating pizza all day long.
Pizza's great. Pizza. Me too. That's my, like, guilty. I mean, it's not
Where
that
do
guilty.
You order from? Do you have a spot in Chicago?
Oh, my gosh.
It's funny because I just talked about this with one.
Do you
it's
have
so
a spot?
Funny. I am a big Geno East if we go deep dish.
Yeah.
Thin
that's
crust.
The first question.
It's, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I'm a big, like, wood fire, so anything wood fire. It doesn't have to be a specific place, but anything. There's a place by us down in Plainfield that I absolutely love because they have a true old-school wood fire and just the crust that's
There's nothing better than wood fire.
Burn,
I'm
charred.
Like Thin Crust Tavern, like the old-school. That's what I like is that Thin Crust. There's a – have you heard of the Kim's, your uncle?
Mm-mm.
It's in Westmont. It got voted like the number one pizza spot in Chicago. It's in the suburbs.
Oh, we gotta
so
try
it was kind of contentious. My dad tried it. He said it's great.
That's awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
Love it. All right. Couple more. How do you stay updated on the latest food trends? And do you have any recommendations for reliable sources?
Your podcast.
Number one.
Now.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Let's hope. Yeah, that's the goal. That's the
First
goal.
Of all, your podcast. I'm a podcast junkie.
Yeah.
You are too.
I love them.
I've been listening recently to Taste Radio. I think they do a nice, that's BevNet, do a nice, like, nice, good interviews. It's not like necessarily, news in terms of, a news outlet, but in terms of podcasts for food and beverage, I really like that. Startup CPG, I'm trying to think of what else, Food Plus Tech. Their newsletter is great. They do like a roundup.
I love newsletters too.
Yeah.
They're so fun.
The amount of newsletters I get in my inbox, it's out of control. But but they do a nice roundup and it's broken out into like restaurant versus retail. And they kind of have every, from Forbes to Eater to, so it's like a, just a really well-rounded, monthly newsletter.
FSM is a good one. I don't know if you get theirs. Mm. Food Service Management Magazine.
I should be,
And they're really in the education space, but they really say, like, what, especially the East Coast seems to be the where innovation
it
happens
does.
In the education space.
Yeah.
You hear about New Hampshire and Connecticut and those type of schools. They're always coming out. I mean, there's dining halls that are fully plant-based.
Yeah.
Fully. And it's just, they're like, it's our busiest dining hall. I'm like, you've got to be like really innovative to be able to have a fully plant-based dining hall and that's your most popular.
You got to be really
good.
And
you see some of the stuff they're making.
That's not easy
to
do.
That is really
different
impressive.
Than my college experience, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably. All right. Last one. For those starting a career in the food industry, what piece of advice do you wish someone had given you?
That's a great question. I think just generally with startups, making sure you have a good support system. And I think a lot of media and people don't really talk about things like mental health and making sure, you have either other founder friends to talk to about things and challenges or an advisor, mentor, or, family, friends, whatever that might be. That's one, I think, piece of advice is just, it's really, really exciting in the beginning, and it's truly exciting the whole time, but it is a roller coaster ride. So, one day you might have a deal fall through that could have made your year. And the next day you might hear back from, really exciting, investor opportunity, and it can be a big kind of fluctuation. So I think understanding how to kind of neutralize that and still get excited about the wins but not get down about, any of the losses, and having a support system definitely helps with that. And then I think the other thing is be upfront from the get-go of where you have skill gaps. So Lauren and I were very adamant about, okay, we don't have supply chain experience. We need a supply chain advisor. We're going to find someone, the best person we can find for it, and then give them some equity. We aren't, dietitians. Let's find a team that, can help us and incentivize them. And let's find, a PhD in nutrition and kind of building that group of advisors and just being really real with yourself about what you don't know.
That's so smart. Be an expert in your field and find others who are expert in theirs. And then that's what makes it all work. That's a great, great piece of advice for anyone in any industry, really. It doesn't even have to be food service. That's a good piece.
Well, thanks. I made a lot of mistakes at the first startup. So I'm like,
we learn from our mistakes. Yeah. I encourage mistakes. If you don't fail, you never learn, because if everything is easy street and then something happens, you don't know how to deal with adversity. You said those lows can be low. And if you don't know how to bounce back and just kind of brush them off and say, well, what did I learn from it?
Yes.
You never move forward and you just stay in that valley. And then, you know, then you're probably peaking at some point. And you don't even realize it because you're still just thinking about those lows. Totally. Oh, I should have sold that, or should have had it.
Well, that's another great point. And we're really lucky. Our team is okay with failing. I mean, like, we're like, test things, you know, within reason, obviously, but try new things. If you're, product development, stuff like that, like, you got to be okay with failing and then, to your point, bouncing back quickly and learning from it and then kind of never looking back, outside of just making sure you don't repeat that mistake and you've learned from it.
For sure. Where does the audience listening, watching, where do they find Realm? Where do they find you ladies? Lauren down in Florida. How do they contact you? How do they purchase your awesome product?
Yes. I'll give my email and maybe social and all of that.
Yeah, go for it.
So my email is Elise, E-L-I-S-E, at realmfoods.com. Our D2C site is realmfoods.com. Our wholesale site is realmfoods-wholesale.com. So sort of two different sites there. And then our social handle is at Realm Foods.
That's awesome. So everyone, check it out. Phenomenal products. If you haven't tried it, you need to try it. Visit the website. And until the next time, we'll see you on the sunny side. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.